Welcome to Rupp Pfalzgraf's Empire State Entrepreneurs and Business Law Podcast. This podcast promises to be a great forum for us to talk about relevant issues for our entrepreneur and business owner clients throughout New York. My name is David Pfalzgraf, and I'm the managing partner of Rupp Pfalzgraf, a full-service law firm headquartered right here in downtown Buffalo in the historic Liberty Building, where we've been for all 23 years of the firm's existence. And I'm really, really lucky to be doing this podcast from a studio at Incept. One of our great business partners do a terrific job at helping my firm with a ton of different marketing issues. And they're also allowing us to be in this incredibly cool new studio right on Michigan Street in downtown Buffalo, which gives us an opportunity to host podcasts like this. So I wanted to give a quick shout out to our friends at Incept for being such great hosts. With that, let me introduce my dear friend and our business partner, John Gavigan. John's currently the CEO of Credit Vault, and in my mind, he's really one of the foremost entrepreneurs in Western New York. Every time I think about John, or describe John to others, or talk about John and what he's doing for our community, I get a big smile on my face, and I oftentimes laugh because of the incredible enthusiasm and energy, positive energy that he brings to friendships, to our community, to the businesses that he's working on. And really, I owe John a great deal of gratitude, not only professionally for helping my law firm achieve some pretty interesting and unique outcomes that we'll talk about here today, but also personally, many, many years ago, for being one of the main inspirations between introducing me and to my significant other now, Amanda. And it was a pretty crazy story. And I think it had to do with the U.S. Open and maybe six or seven honey deuces that were consumed at the Open before.
It took to get her on board. I don't know. You're right.
But maybe John would have a more unique or better perspective on the personal side quick before we talk more about ways in which we've worked together professionally.
Actually, that was probably one of the most it was probably one of the most impactful times, just connecting just you and Amanda, right? We were at the U.S. Open and honey deuces and the energy and, you know, the train rides into Queens and Flushing Meadows. And it was amazing. And all of a sudden it just clicked. Nicole and I were like, what about Pfalzgraf? You know, she was moving to London, I think, at the time, right? Or maybe she was coming back from London. She was overseas. We all wanted to get this amazing talent. She's a beautiful soul, as you know, to come back stateside. And certainly we love having her in Buffalo, New York, and to, you know, watch your relationship flourish and knowing that we had something to do with it. I don't know. It's talking about living your best life. I think we called it chapter seven in our life together, right? It was it's certainly in our book. So,
well, for that, we'll always owe John and Nicole a special debt of gratitude. And that sort of led to John and I having an opportunity to work together professionally. And we were thinking boldly as a law firm during a strategic planning offsite a number of years ago, and we were impressed by the work that John was doing in the entrepreneurial community in Western New York, and in particular as his role at 43 North was flourishing. And we thought, you know, would there be a chance that we could have someone who would really push a group of somewhat conservative traditional lawyers to think about the practice of law differently than our peer group of firms. And so John and I collaborated. We ended up bringing him in to be a facilitator, a moderator of a retreat. And I'll let John talk a little bit about how many boundaries he pushed with us that day and some of the great outcomes we experienced as a firm.
Yeah, but that actually, I mean, you know, like life just seems to be made up of a series of moments, right? And those are become memories and hopefully the limestone in your own quarry. But that was actually, that day was one of my favorite days, because at the time, you know, when we were trying to energize the community around venture and the startup community and the power of entrepreneurism and scalable entrepreneurism, that wasn't a part of our, you know, business culture here in Western New York. You know, I give a lot of credit to guys like Jordy and Jordy Levy and Ron Schreiber and the people at Launch and there was a nascent group at that point that was really involved in that, in the startup community and building a culture of entrepreneurship here. Certainly 43 North took a prominent role in that endeavor. But one of the tricks was to engage the rest of the business community. And I remember at the time when you called me about coming into, and it was really difficult to do, right? People are used to making money and developing their businesses in the traditional ways.
No doubt.
And so here, knowing you call me up one day, and we all know that lawyers and most firms are very resistant to change, resistant to technology. I mean, you probably have had the same billable hour business model for 6,000 years, right? So when you called me that day and you were like, hey, this is what we're thinking about doing. We're going to bring the whole team to 43 North and the incubator and really love the energy around new businesses, et cetera, could help the region flourish. And we'd like to do this Shark Tank style thing. And what we'll do is break into four groups, our firm into four groups, and they'll each design their own company. And then they'll select a representative to pitch it. And then, you know, I was lucky enough to be one of the sharks, so to speak. Hopefully it wasn't too, too difficult. but we had some difficult people on that panel. So we're all listening. And I was so impressed by it. I was like, this is exactly the type of energy we need from the business community here to think about entrepreneurship and innovation in a whole new way. The ability to disrupt technologies and legacy work processes to flourish and to add competitive advantages and competitive moats in their own businesses. Things are moving way too quickly now. So unless you're moving at the state of change, you know, you run the risk of losing what you have. So we do this thing. And I remember this was such an interesting moment. We all take a vote, right? We all ask the questions and they deliver the pitches and they were phenomenal. And the end result, I believe you guys wanted to open a distillery, a beer distillery, right? Which is amazing because that was a huge part of our entrepreneurship back in, you know, the turn of the century before Prohibition, right? It was us in Brooklyn. So I thought it was really interesting, but one of the pitches were this really unique way that Tony Rupp had come up with, because he had collected all this mental data about how juries make decisions. And so one of his strengths in your firm, if I remember correctly, was his ability to select juries and knowing when to use his, I think it was voir dires, if I remember correctly, right?
Am I correct? Peremptory challenges, right.
Excuse me, my JD is lagging. And when I heard that pitch, I was like, wow, that's scalable and that's so unique. And if you could take what's in his head and put it into code and algorithms, and potentially even, you know, even artificial intelligent systems, then perhaps you can predict, how whether or not we should be taking a new case to trial, or whether or not we should go to settlement. And if you can streamline that process, that would give you a really unique advantage in the marketplace. And I saw that quickly, and so everybody wanted to vote on the beer garden or whatever it was. And I thought it was great. I hope you guys still did it so that we can hang out. But at the end of the day, that was the real business. And that was a scalable business. And I advocated that should be the vote. And I believe that since then, right, we connected you with Steve Poland and you guys went on to go build this platform internally. And to me, knowing the industry and maybe the resistance, the historical resistance to change, knowing that it was a law firm that was going to take a step in this type of direction, which is so unusual, not only in Buffalo, but now that we've talked to lawyers across the country and internationally, it's the same everywhere. The fact that you guys took that step was a boost of confidence, not only in my sales ability to sell you on the idea of like, this is where you should go. It was more of, I was so grateful that a service provider in our community got it and that they were taking their resources to go develop something that could create a great business that would ultimately lead to jobs, that would ultimately lead to building a better community, et cetera. and not only providing value to the markets that ultimately you've served with GoToVerdict. And so that's been a successful endeavor for you guys, and
quite a successful
one. It's actually one of my favorite memories from that time.
It's neat. If you fast forward then 6 or 7 years later after that fun Shark Tank exercise that John helped to facilitate, you know, GoToVerdict has become somewhat of a leading institution when it comes to utilizing analytics and research when it comes to selecting a jury versus sort of the traditional hunch and feel method that lawyers had used for centuries. And so we're trying to sort of turn that process on its head. And Tony Rupp's been very, very keenly engaged in that with entrepreneurs like Steve Poland to try to commercialize what my law firm is now using internally. But is there a market externally where we could have other lawyers benefit from having information fed to them as they're picking juries real time, as opposed to being in the dark in terms of trends that they might see with jurors because of their background. So really neat. And we are appreciative that you sort of pushed us to think more about GTV or GoToVerdict than you did about launching the distillery. Which
it's amazing to me you guys decided to go in that direction and how unique it was, particularly at the time. I think we're seeing more and more businesses kind of go in that direction. Partly because it's really, really exciting, but it also protects their interests that they're currently working on and gives them new blue ocean to explore with other things that are trapped in their heads that could be, you know, born into new products and add value to other market, you know, to markets that are consistent with what they know. So it was just a great example. It was actually, truly, it was one of my favorite moments because it's like hitting another inflection point. You know, these little limestone layers just have been building over time in our community. And that was a really great example of it.
And as I think about your career path, John, and we're going to get into Credit Vault, and John's currently the CEO of a very unique and kind of fast growing company called Credit Vault. And I'd like to think we helped motivate or inspire you a bit to see that there was opportunity in the legal community to be a disruptor, both back then as far as picking juries traditionally or in a more modern way, but also today too with the way wires are initiated each and every day, thousands and thousands of wires. You saw an opportunity to sort of disrupt the traditional legal marketplace. So I want to hear about Credit Vault and Wire Vault, but before we get to that, tell me a little bit about 43 North, your experiences at 43 North and thereafter at Endeavor, in ways in which you think that those experiences have led you to be in a great position today to help accelerate the growth of a business like Credit Vault. What did you learn or what did you see during those experiences that benefited you today?
I think when I reflect on it now, I realized how much all of my prior experiences led to 43 North. So it actually is equally as helpful to go back in time a little bit, and I'll try to do it quickly. But I went to school for accounting at University of Binghamton, and it had an exceptional accounting program. I didn't even know going into college that there were other real majors. I was good at math, and so there was two sides of Binghamton for me. Number one, when I was in my first accounting class, my first week of freshman year, my professor in the class said, you know, he was very disenchanted because people weren't answering questions and apparently we blew a test or something. And he threw the papers down and he's like, you guys seem to forget that you think you're here to learn accounting. What you really are here to learn is how to generate business first. The service that you're providing happens to be accounting, but you're generating business first. And that was a great lesson to me. You know, that we can be highly skilled in certain areas, but unless you know how to take your product, whether it's service or technology or whatever, to market, that's really important. I think it's important for lawyers to understand it, and architects and anybody in the service field, we have to get product to market, right? Because money and revenue and adding value to your employees and your markets is what sustains the business over a long period of time, right? So I learned how to be an accountant, and I learned that really important lesson early. And my second lesson was really at Xerox and learning how to add the science of business development and product development to the art of business development, right? There's a natural skill set, right? Just the congeniality with people and listening skills and things of those nature that are kind of the art part of sales. But there's also a science, it's math, right? You have to have a lot of at-bats. You got to know what your win rates are to move things from stage to stage. And I learned that at Xerox and I'm very grateful for that. And I also understood how an international company operated. So a lot of learnings there. I learned how to manage people and a lot of tools. I then parlayed that to XSI, Xero Graphic Solutions in 2006. I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur, take these lessons and really generate opportunities for me and my family and the customers that I had supported. And that was my first real business endeavor. And that's really where I learned entrepreneurship, how to take a look at the business as a six-sided Rubik's Cube, from operations to financing, to sales, marketing, cash flow, all these different elements kind of got looped into one business that my partner and I were responsible for. And it was very successful. And we built a great business. We sold that business to Xerox in 2011. So going through that process of M&A, really interesting. And so had it not been for those experiences, I would have never even really known that something like 43 North even existed. I didn't really understand the venture, startup space. Those were foreign words to me because I was working in enterprise businesses, you know. And it was our mutual friend, Bridget Doherty, that had called Sharon Rendacio, who's one of my close friends now, and had recommended me for the job that was available to be the executive director of 43 North, this business plan competition. Ironically, the same day I'm looking at the newspaper and my predecessor had left, and I said, God, this would fit me so perfect. And I wanted to ship my career back to Buffalo, and I was doing a lot of traveling, and it just worked out. And what it taught me was really what scalable startups and really how broad the world was in disruptive and transformative technologies and businesses, and how much of an impact those types of businesses can have on a community. There's a book, the New Geography of Jobs, that had highlighted that one job of innovation, like a software engineer or like a coder or somebody in the innovation space, the startup space, actually has a catalytic multiplier effect of five jobs in the service sector. So one equals five in the manufacturing space. And then why the reason why everybody wants manufacturing is it's a 1-3 multiplier effect. In our space, it's 1-5. So, and that's three service, trained service people and two, so three skilled, two unskilled. So you get a barista and a restaurant tour, you know, a server or whatever, and you get two lawyers and an accountant because of one job in that space. So you could see the multiplier effect that something like this in our community could have. And it gave me that knowledge. It also gave me the knowledge of venture capital, startup, learning from people like Eric Reich and Bill Maggio and Ron Schreiber and Jordy, and then by extension, communicating our message of Western New York and how this community was ready to go to its next step, and being able to cascade that message across the United States was really an unbelievable experience. And I learned a whole new industry. When Endeavor came on board years later, I figured out that there was an international flavor to this, that it wasn't just domestic. And now the world has shrunk to this big. I have team members all across the United States. I have seven in Buffalo, 17 members in Buffalo now. We have multiple investors, and one of our board members is here as well. So we've got a great core team here in Western New York, the community I absolutely love the most, aside from my own household. And but knowing how to work with an international team and always being able to identify new talent and channels to address the markets we want to and to capitalize on the opportunities that we have, that becomes vital. and the world is shrinking. Technology has enabled that. And regardless of all the challenges in the world, there's always opportunities for entrepreneurs to take it to another level.
When you look back at your experience at 43 North and Endeavor and working with some just amazing people, you've mentioned some of their names already, but tell me what qualities or attributes did you quickly see were important when it came to an entrepreneur and his or her level of success? The great results that 43 North has provided for our community, ACV comes to mind, but there were plenty of others as well, or Endeavor. What themes or what sort of characteristics or attributes did you see in these entrepreneurs who were building these companies and putting a stake in the ground in Western New York?
Probably, quite candidly, probably not so different than the talent that you're looking for at Rupp Pfalzgraf, right? It boils down to, at least to me, competence and commitment. I think there's a different layer. As I define commitment, there may be a different layer to that because you need the resiliency and the temperament, because it can be day to day, week to week. You know, I've been the CEO of Creditball for 18 months. I was an advisor to the company prior to that. And I can reflect back on literally the hundreds of challenges that we had to overcome to get to the point we are today, which is releasing a new product in a week and a half, which is going to be our second product, and knowing how difficult it was to get through each one of those things. But who is it? Matt Damon in Martian said, you just solve one problem at a time, and if you're lucky enough, you get all the way home. So finding resiliency, because you're never short of problems. Number two, I would tell you that it is, you have to commit to the philosophy, and I've seen this with other entrepreneurs and other leaders of startups, you have to commit to the philosophy that there's always an answer to a problem. And if you're diligent enough and you're surrounded by good enough talent, you'll find the answer to get through that one moment so that you have another moment to address. You do that enough times, you're going to reach your next milestone. You reach enough milestones, you're going to create something valuable for your market, for your employees, for your investors, for your community, for your home, your family. And so that's what I've seen in entrepreneurs. But you're an entrepreneur as well. I'm sure you have the same challenges or the same approach, similar. The other side is commitment or competence. So I've realized as CEO, my real job is chief listening officer, is actually one of the most vital things. And I've learned this by watching other successful entrepreneurs. I have this internal philosophy that I no longer have to have the right answers, but I better be one of the better ones to ask the right questions. So I spend a lot of time formulating the right question in the simplest form. And it's a very hard exercise to execute well. I've assembled the 98 Yankees on Credit Vault. That is no joke. We have some of the best, most talented people I've worked with in my professional life. And what I've realized is they're so much smarter. They have acumen in so many other spaces that I don't have naturally. So by asking favorable questions, generally they're the ones coming up with the greatest ideas or solutions or how to address a problem that we may be faced with or an opportunity that we have in front of us. And so I learned those skills from unbelievable mentors, and I mentioned just a few. The other thing that is really part of the commitment side, I'm just shifting back real quick, is operational execution. And something at 43 North that became very apparent to me, it was based on my experiences at XSI, but I had begun to realize that people can be driven by outputs, right? I want this amount of revenue, and that becomes the ethos, and it's important to have goals. But without a commitment to execution, and a commitment to the inputs that lead to outputs, then you'll never achieve them. So really the magic sauce or the secret sauce is really being very diligent about the inputs that lead to, I've had investors ask me, well, what's your exit strategy? That's an output. We're going to have so many exit strategies for Creditvault, it'll be silly. But in order to achieve those different branches or opportunities, we have to stay focused and execute on what's in front of us and what the new milestones are over a period of time. And it took me literally watching some of the best entrepreneurs around the world and how they approach their business and the way they operate and manage their business. All of those lessons kind of led to, again, building the proper limestone layers that put me in position to, I think, be a relatively effective CEO and what I'm trying.
Can you talk a little bit, expand on that a bit with Creditvault and WireVault and talk to us about some of those inputs that you saw that were effective or maybe some that were ineffective over the last 18 months? Give everyone a sense of the scope and magnitude of Creditvault, what you're working on now and what lessons you found to be most valuable as you built out this new platform you're working on today.
The application of WireVault, essentially, just real quick, we collect wire information to protect law firms from wire fraud, which is a big problem, not only domestically, but particularly overseas, where that's all they do is wires. Right? We have a lot of different payment systems. But in the U.S. alone, it rose 46% last year. It's a big problem. Law firms are a honeypot because cyber criminals have technology to overcome some of the security infrastructures that are currently available in law firms, right? So we unpacked this problem. We went to law firms, understood their funds flow process and how they get money flow between buyers and sellers in various transactions like real estate, M&A, buy, sell, et cetera, right? When we started talking to investors, which is the fuel to build product and get to the next milestones, we call it traction. It was amazing to me how many of the investors were actually saying, you know, look at all these other use cases for this. You got title, you got logistics, you've got pension, you've got trust, you've got all these different things, 3PL. And what I would remind them is we need to execute what we need to execute right in front of us. Yes, this is blue ocean. But how much time do you spend on exploring what we call shiny toys as opposed to capitalizing on what you've built right in front of you? And sometimes you can get distracted by too many opportunities without actually focusing and executing on the things that are going to lead to enough traction, lead to enough capital, both in the financing and earned revenue side, to get you to another position where then you can begin to scale and branch out into new markets, right? And I think that that's a common mistake that many newer entrepreneurs, they just see so many opportunities and they want to tackle them all. I think about my kids are really into the Marvel movies, and this is and I remember watching this one where it was all the Marvel characters. It was great. And Flash was in his first fight. Okay, so Flash, who's the young one, is in his first fight. And Batman's kind of like the old, you know, guru, and he's kind of the leader of the troop, right? I can't remember what movie it was, but it was great. Anyway, Flash is like concerned because there's like hundreds of bad guys around, and Flash is like, I don't know what to do. And so Batman said, just go save one person. Just go save one person, and you'll know what to do next. And it really resonated with me from a business perspective. Like, go save one person, you'll likely be able to save two, and it'll multiply from there. And I think that's I would say is probably the number one.
Talk about human capital for a minute and what you're seeing in our Western New York committee and our community. And do you see a need to continue to build out that human element and be able to recruit from outside of Western New York, and how much how many challenges have you had in that regard, or how much successes have you had when it comes to building out your team with this neat new Creditvault?
Yeah, we're fortunate that we have an international team, which is really helpful because it also positions us for scale internationally, right? There's plenty of markets and applications that we could take our technologies to and new markets, et cetera. But talent is everything. As I said before, it's like, I know, like, for example, Holly Hubert is our chief information security officer. She spent 25 years as a leader in the FBI. She ran crime and cybersecurity. She managed 250 people. Like,
love Holly.
Holly's unbelievable, right? Joe Peters was really the first person that brought blockchain to Buffalo. He's got 10 years of blockchain experience. He evangelized Ethereum at the time, so much so that, you know, hundreds of people in our incubator got their first crypto wallets back in 2015 and 16 because of Joe's knowledge and his ability to communicate the advantages and security surrounding blockchain applications. And so that minted multiple net new, and I want to say like in the hundreds of net new millionaires, right? Those collaborations, those people went on to go create other businesses. Those people went to go work for innovative startups or businesses that were innovating. So everybody's technical skills, experiences, desire to be around other innovative and talented people, it took everybody's game to the next level. Our talent pool today is the best it's ever been.
That's great to hear.
Without a doubt. And now I have visuals of what it looks like in other communities around the world. Most people don't know that Buffalo is now ranked in the top 70 emerging startup ecosystems in the world, which puts us in the top 100. This didn't exist wow. 10 years ago. So we can look backwards and say, here are all the inputs that went into creating that. But the real thing is, what are we going to do next? It's not about where we came from. It's now about where we're going. What does version two of our startup community really look like? Talent is a big part of it. We have a great foundation of talent here in Western New York. But candidly, more, as we've seen with our population increase, particularly among young people here over the last decade, people want, and people trying to move from the coasts, right? Whether it's unfortunately New York City or Silicon Valley, it's just too expensive, right? There's other complications out there. They're gravitating to communities like ours. And so this presents us a really good opportunity to brand our community both domestically and internationally, that we're a great place to go start, build, and create these businesses and find the necessary talent to fuel them. We're at a really good inflection point, but it's also important for us to tell that story in a much broader scope. So we continue to attract the greatest talent here. And I would tell you, now that we've seen a more diverse community, in multiple different neighborhoods around our urban populations, man, that is just adding a whole new flavor to our community that is just making it vibrant, whether it's the restaurants we eat in, whether it's the retail experiences we have, whether it's the perspectives that they're bringing from other, life experiences. It's just enriching our community in such a way that it's, I mean, candidly, I'm actually grateful that this is where God chose me to live. And I think that we, if we continue to think through a spirit of abundance and not scarcity, as Bill Maggio would say, I think that there's no stopping what this community is capable of doing together.
Oh, that's great to hear. That's inspiring, John. And I think as I think about trying to build a law firm, I do think about the potential that we have and what steps do we need to take as leaders to try to maximize that potential. And the way you describe that as sort of for our community as a whole is motivating. It's inspiring. I think we can all do our part to help accelerate that development within our community. So we need people like you launching these businesses and having mentors that are out there. And on that note, I know you've had some great role models and mentors. What advice would you give to younger entrepreneurs, John, when it comes to trying to find the right fit as far as a professional services firm, as far as a a mentor or a role model, people who had an influence of in your life, you were blessed and enriched as a result of, but not everyone might have that network or that ability to step right in to have that sort of those leaders around them. So any advice to a young entrepreneur who's out there working his or her butt off trying to build their business and ways in which they can try to accelerate some outcomes for their business as well?
What advice would I give? First bit of advice, if you're not winning, you're learning. And I think most people don't actually understand what that means. Like, you don't have to be, success is in the learning. So young entrepreneurs, that every experience you have, good or bad, whether or not you were successful in that endeavor or not, it's really important to take learnings away from that. Okay. So I would say number one is more philosophical, and you got to capitalize on those learning opportunities. So number two is, we're lucky to be in a community that's so open, that so wants people engaged. It's interesting that our community is not necessarily about getting names on street signs anymore, right? This is about finding your way on a big bronze plaque that someday will be sitting in City Hall, that this was the generation of Buffalonians that changed the course of direction in their community and became an example to other communities around this country. We were a startup in the startup space or the venture space 10 years ago. We're no longer a startup. We're a scale-up. And whether or not you were a startup or a scale-up as a community, there are ways to get engaged with this community so that you too can find your way on that plaque, because every touch point, every win, every resource that wants to add the value of their learnings along the way will contribute in some way to this community. If you're a parent and you're at dinner tables, you should be talking entrepreneurship and getting engaged in this place. If you're a new entrepreneur, you want to get in this space, Buffalo Startup Weekend is happening, I think, in a couple of weeks. You got 43 North launching their big event at the beginning of October. There's thousands of people that show up, and they socialize with other people and they network. That's touch point number one. And you're going to meet one person that's going to give you a card and say, engage with me, right? And then you're going to find Jack Greco's Buffalo Bridge article, and you're going to start learning, and here are the different jobs and here are the different opportunities available. And you're going to see all this stuff, right? But unless you're the one that takes the step off the curb, no one's coming to find you. You got to kind of find this, but it's wide open. There's calendar events on every single startup platform, from Launch New York to 43 North to the Buffalo Angels, the Rochester Angels, University of Buffalo, Blackstone, Endeavors thing. There's opportunities literally endless at Seneca One Tower, you know, where I just go into the elevator, you'll see a whole list of calendar events. But most people want, it's kind of like what Kennedy said, and not ask, you know, don't ask what you can do for your country, ask what you can do for your country, right? Same thing. Just step off the curb,
right,
and you'll find somebody, right? But
you got to put yourself out. You got to put yourself out there.
It's like anything, right?
You got to be willing to step off the curb. I like that reference.
We're for a scale up right now. So it's scale up. It requires even more resources, right? And more touch points. This is our service providers. It's our financial capital to fuel these businesses. So these are investors. It's customers. One of the biggest things that I've always said that our community can do is be the first customer, be the pilot for new innovations. We all support each other. And make no mistake, 8 of the top 10 foundations in this community, which touch all of our parks, educational systems, our medical, life, security, law enforcement, whatever. These are all foundations that contribute into making a more enriching life in our community. 8 of those 10 foundations were developed through the wealth created by entrepreneurs. This is the pathway to creating a more vibrant community. without a doubt. And so the more you can get engaged by, yes, I'll be a customer. Yes, I have my hand up to be the first pilot. Yes, I'll be an investor. Yes, I'll be an employee. Yes, I'm going to talk to this about my with my grandkids sitting at Sunday brunch. Yes, there's a role to play. This is our inflection point, in my opinion, as a community, but without a doubt, at least in the last, since what, 1908, we were the eighth largest city in the country. And then we, you know, all sorts of things happen along the way. So in 100 years, this has become our moment.
That's great, John. Last question. Most rewarding aspect of being an entrepreneur, you've you know, bought and sold businesses, you've helped to build businesses, you've had some great success, you've had some failures too, but give our entrepreneur listeners a sense of what you found to be most rewarding throughout your career by being this sort of serial entrepreneur.
I hope, well, at the risk of sounding a bit God-like, you know, because everybody's got a different religious appetite or spiritual appetite. But for me, it has been the closest thing that I've had in my relationship with God. I thank God every day that I'm in, literally, this is a daily occurrence, that I thank God that I'm in the position because I feel alive. There's no other way to explain it. I don't feel as alive. And, you know, in my whole life, I honestly feel like what I'm doing is what I'm meant to be doing. And I know that perhaps, not perhaps, I know that God's working through me because he knows how much I care about my community, how much I care about my investors, how much I care about the success of these unbelievable, talented people that I work with. When I get up in the morning and it's difficult to get up every day because I'm working 18 hours a day, right? So this can be challenging. And some days are better than others. But you know what gets me out of my bed thinking that I have to execute for Rupp Fallsgraf on the deployment on October 2nd? Or I think about Gene Grams as saying, he's one of our investors, and I think about him, right? That I'm doing the work, or I think about a specific employee, and that's motivation enough for me to get out of bed. And at the times that I need it, and I know that at the risk of being disrespectful, the big guy is standing right next to me doing this. And God willing, it'll all go back into making our community better. It's a pay it forward mentality, and I've got the most powerful source sitting right on my shoulder. So
that's great, John. Thank you for that talk and for that those inspiring words, and hopefully all of our listeners can take some things out of this podcast today and try to pay it forward to benefit our community, and as you've done over the years. So can't begin to thank you enough. I got a little swag for you. You know, you give me a lot of grief at times about wearing the Brand Fuel, and so I thought I'd bring a little Brand Fuel for you. And
I really like the shirt. I hate to do it. You're about the same size. I have a little bit broader shoulders, but
I'll put the hat
on. You got the hat. I got the shirt. Right, I swear to God, I was looking for a blue one. I'm not kidding.
We'll call that a wrap.
I love it. Great. That was
awesome. Well, I guess that's a wrap. John, I can't begin to thank you enough for sharing all that insight, for motivating all of us today, for inspiring me with some of those great stories. I also wanted to give a shout out to our friends at INSEP for allowing us to be in this super cool studio so that we could host this podcast with John today. And if any of entrepreneurs listening today or business owners throughout New York have any follow-up questions, or if we piqued your interest in any way, please go to our website, RuppFallsgraf.com. You can see it right here. A little confusing to spell, but I promise you'll get the hang of it. And feel free to give me a call anytime, and I'd be happy to consult with you about any of the issues that you're facing today. Thanks again.